Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Colson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Agent Grant Ward, and I can punch the Hulk in the face while brushing my teeth.
And I'm Agent Grant Ward. I can defuse a bomb with both eyes closed and a head wound, as long as there aren't any red wires.
And you've been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives, presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you have all been cleared to know the truth. So, actually, this is Jay.
Oh, and I'm Josh, yeah.
And we are back on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week. I am going out on a limb here and saying that this will be an episode that people look back on and say, this is the turning point for season one.
Yeah. Can you say finding your stride?
Yeah, this was a great episode. I'm really eager to talk about it. I think there was a lot of cool stuff in it. And the buzz on the internet was really, really good. The ratings actually were pretty high for this episode too. Not that I'm really focusing on that. Because you can have great ratings and still be a cruddy show. So
yeah. Well, so were they higher than a couple weeks ago?
They were higher than the previous one. They I think S.H.I.E.L.D. finished second on the previous episode, and they are back to first in the time slot.
I don't have
the actual number in front of me.
Well, I wonder if even if next week they'll be slightly higher with the positive buzz that's been going around for this one. So
I would hope so.
Me too. Because I really did enjoy this one. May possibly be my favorite one.
I think this is probably my favorite episode so far because of stuff that we will talk about here. But it was a really great character episode, and it had some really emotional moments in it. And I think the writers are playing on the preconceptions of the. Of the audience, you know, with, it's a Joss Whedon show. So, you know, no character could possibly ever be safe. And I think we really feel that this episode. So we'll get into that more, but what is this episode actually?
Actually this week here, we're going to be investigating episode 6 from season 1.
Okay.
Did I pronounce that right? Did I put enough Z's in that?
I think that's that sounds good.
So it originally aired November 5th of 2013. Now, let's see. The writer of this episode was Paul Spazuski.
Okay.
And it was directed by Vincent Miziano. And hopefully I got those names right. I've looked up how to pronounce the writer's name there.
This might be the hardest episode we've had to pronounce the creative team on it.
Yeah, and this show is has been pretty tough as it is. So
yeah,
this was the toughest. But I don't know. Spazevsky.
I don't know. Eagle was pretty easy last week, wasn't it?
Eagle. Oh, that's true. Yeah, Eagle. They gave us a little break right before the real hard one. So that was nice.
Right.
But So this episode, let me just run down what it was about, and then we can kind of get into the meaty chunks of it later here. But, when three firefighters they're infected by an alien virus, what they find out later on is from a Chitauri helmet, the agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Have to take that helmet to the sandbox, which is a secret S.H.I.E.L.D. area conveniently far away. Matters take a turn for the worse there when they find out that Simmons has been infected with this virus, and they must race the clock before she suffers the same floating fate as those firemen did. And also take the bus down with her since they are mid-flight when they discover this.
Oh, let me apologize here. I'm actually getting the shows that we work on confused because Eagle was actually the director of the Arrow episode last week. Jesse was the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. last week. But still, that was a pretty easy name. So I'll just make the correction.
It was an easy name.
Yeah, I'll make the correction here right live on the show so we don't have to come back next week and apologize. So
that's a good idea. So all good writers, either way.
Yeah.
So okay. Anyway, great show. And we'll talk a little bit more about Coulson and his feelings and emotions leading down the season.
What makes him tick? I'm surprised they haven't used that one yet. That that would be a good that must mean he's like a clockwork man. Let's cover a little bit of news here with the release of Thor. Actually, tonight as we record this, Thor: The Dark World came out. S.H.I.E.L.D., Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., will be having a crossover with the events of the Thor film in 2 weeks for episode 8. About a week and a half now. So look forward to that. I believe the episode is called The Well, which it's not necessarily going to have any of the guest stars from the movie in it. But who knows? They could surprise us. But it will be dealing with sort of, I guess, cleanup as S.H.I.E.L.D. does after, you know, the events of superhero action sequences. Also,
it's like the night custodian shift of superhero movies.
Well, it's funny, you know, saying stuff like that because there was a comic series in the late 80s, maybe the early 90s, called Damage Control. And there were two series, they were each 4 issues apiece, and it was basically the guys that go around and clean up New York after Spider-Man and Fantastic Four and the Avengers, you know, fight people and, you know, break buildings and stuff, and it's the guys that have to go clean up and repair the buildings and all sorts of stuff like that, and there were always cameos by superheroes in the background, but it was actually, you know, similar to this.
I bet if this was how our real world was, I bet we would have a government department of superhero cleanup.
Yeah.
That sounds like something we'd have to create just for that.
And I'm sure there'd be a lot of red tape. And blue tape and green tape.
Red tape. It's led by superheroes, actually. It's a group of superheroes that clean up. Red tape is one of them.
That's his code name.
Yeah, that's his code name, red tape.
That's a great. That would be a great code name. I may have to do that as a Halloween costume next year, Josh.
That is a good idea. Hey, we got to start writing these things down.
I know. I'll make a note.
Or recording them somewhere, you know.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great if we could just preserve them for posterity there. So, also, I wanted to let everybody know about a new comic book / trade paperback. It's not really as big as a trade paperback, but it's bigger than a comic just in terms of pages. It's called S.H.I.E.L.D. Origins, and it's got... the cover of it's relatively lame. It's just the promotional picture from season one here with the cast standing in front of the kind of the S.H.I.E.L.D. logo with the orange light behind them. but it presents, 4.5 comics inside of it, presenting modern versions of the characters from S.H.I.E.L.D. So it's mostly comics that have been out in the last... 2 to 3 years. It includes Battle Scars number 6, which introduces Nick Fury Jr., who actually is... it's a very complicated mythos here, as it is in all comics, but basically he's a African-American guy that ends up leading S.H.I.E.L.D., looks very much like Sam Jackson, and is supposed to be the son of the original Nick Fury, except that Nick Fury was white and... Nick Fury Jr. is black. So go ahead.
You know, you
read Wikipedia. You can find out all about it.
he named his son Nick Fury Jr.
I think it's more he adopted him in, and the guy took the name Nick Fury Jr. in homage to Nick Fury. Anyway. Buy the comic, read it, and understand there. It also contains Secret Avengers number 1. That's volume 2 from from 2013. There was a Secret Avengers series out in 2011 as well that went about 24 issues. This issue features Agent Coulson and Nick Fury and Maria Hill and Hawkeye and Black Widow. And then there's also a two-part S.H.I.E.L.D. story from Avenging Spider-Man, number 20 and 21 from just like a year ago. And then it also reprints Strange Tales, number 135, which is the first appearance of S.H.I.E.L.D. from 1951 that we talked about previously, where you can see the initial creations of the helicarrier, the LMDs, and Lola, the flying car. So that's it's about $8, I believe, for this series. So if you guys are interested in kind of what S.H.I.E.L.D. is, you know, what's happening with S.H.I.E.L.D. right now in the comic books, this is a nice little introduction to that. And then on even a less slightly related note.
He's the head of the Department of Superhero Cleanup.
Okay. Leslie. Seriously, dude, write this stuff down. We need to do like a little mini comic about this or something, I think. And we can get if there's anyone out there that's an artist and wants to draft up some characters for us, go ahead and you can send them over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/agentspodcast. But yeah, on a slightly related note, there was an announcement just the other day, which I haven't talked to you about this yet, but I am just super excited about this. Netflix has signed up with Marvel to do 4 new television shows direct to Netflix, at least 13 episodes each. So we're talking about 13 times 4. So what's that? About 52 episodes of superhero Marvel things on Netflix. And when they release those, they'll release all 13 episodes at a time if they do it like House of Cards and Orange is the New Black. And the heroes they are going to be focusing on are going to start with Daredevil and include Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist, and it will culminate in a Defenders miniseries, which, wow. I mean, just this boggles the mind with the interrelated crossovers that can happen with these series, which can all be written and produced at the same time. It's totally possible for them to have all these superheroes crossover. Unknown yet if they will cross over with the mainstream Marvel universe, but they probably will be part of the same universe we're seeing on screen, you know, on the big screen as well as on the S.H.I.E.L.D. Universe. But these will all take place in the part of New York City called Hell's Kitchen, which is most prominently featured in the Daredevil comics, but all these other characters interact with that location throughout their runs. And for people that are not familiar with these, take a look online. We're not going to talk too much about them here on our podcast because we're dedicated to S.H.I.E.L.D., but you know, keep an eye out for news on this if you are a fan of Marvel Comics.
I'm a little surprised at the ambitiousness of comic book stories in media, and you know, I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. is related to that. Just how many different comics they're going out there and putting out for everybody. It's the main genre right now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you get different genres that go through these things. You know, you got the like the 80s, you know, was doing the buddy cop film, right? You know, you had all the Lethal Weapons and everything like that. But, you know, from a Hollywood standpoint, you've got all these other people that you're not having to pay money to, and they're developing the look, you know, they're developing characters, the look of these characters, and stories. And all you have to do is go in and say, wow, that's a really great story. We're going to take this comic book and we're going to adapt it. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, adapting a book, but it's got probably a bigger audience and actually a more fervent audience. I think people that actually want to seek this stuff out, just like everybody listening to this show, you know, they're been clamoring for these kind of things for a long time. And to have a kind of cohesive universe in the media in the same way that the comic universe is cohesive, more or less, I think is really exciting to fans. So go ahead, Josh.
Oh, well, no, I was just going to say it would be an interesting topic for a future show of some kind, just talking about the genre right now and where it's headed. And, you know, because the generation that really thrives on this kind of storytelling is older. I wouldn't say it's kids. And so I'm very curious as to see, you know, what the kids of today, what they're what their future genre is going to be. Mm. If we're dominating the comics, I say we, because I consider us in that generation. But
yeah, well, I will say that, you know, you've made it, you know, in the mainstream, you know, as a mainstream thing, when they start doing, you know, porno spoofs of your, you know, genre.
That's when you know you've made
it. That's when you know. So.
Well, I have yet to make it, that's for sure.
Well, you're not really a genre unto yourself, though.
No, I'm not. I'm not, clearly.
So, all right. Well, let's get into talking about FZZT, or FZZT. I've seen it both ways. It looks like the agentsofshield.com site and ABC actually have it as F period Z period Z period T period. So
that threw me off a little bit because,
yeah,
at first I thought it was the sound effect, you know, and then
right, and then you see
like
that
an acronym and
yeah. Huh. Well, I will say that basically, having seen the episode, and tell me if you agree with this, I think it is the sound effect sound of the electricity, like, shocking Simmons.
That, yes, like, I think so.
Right. Okay. So we can just refer to this as episode 6.
Well, and at some point, I thought maybe that they were going to come up with the name of this virus or something, and its acronym was going to be FZZT, which kind of fit, but they never did that.
That would have been cool. Yeah. It was an interesting take on, you know, the whole, because basically it was a bottle show, except for just a, you know, a couple of scenes at the beginning, one at the campsite at night, and then probably, you know, basically the same location. They just probably turned the camera around and they were at the barn, right? Which, by the way, I'm pretty sure that was Herschel's barn from the second season of Walking Dead.
From Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Really?
It looked like it. I mean, I'm
going to have to go back and check it out.
I don't know. I don't know if they filmed that in L.A. or if they were filming the barn, you know, out near Atlanta. But maybe it was the barn they used in the Walking Dead special for Mythbusters. I don't know. But for the most part, you know, this entire episode took place on the bus. So we were able to get a lot of... you know, a lot of character moments. Some people complain that the first half of the episode was kind of par for the course with what we've gotten, you know, with sort of a plot-driven storyline. But what interested me was when they wrapped that up and they're like, okay, you know, the third guy blew up and we got the helmet. I'm like, wow, we're only, you know, halfway through the episode right now.
I double-checked.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, so this is cool. That gives us a lot of time, which I really appreciated them kind of just getting to the point, not belaboring and drawing everything out, and then giving us all this great character stuff in the second half of the episode. But what I'd like to start talking about first, actually, Josh, is the scene with Coulson and the firefighter.
The firehouse.
At the firehouse, right.
And right.
When he goes in, so basically he asks his entire team to clear out. This guy's about to go, you know, whatever, nuclear, but not nuclear, like...
Electrostatic.
Electrostatic. He's about to EMP, and, you know, my thought is like, wow, okay, so if, you know, is Coulson going to be there? If he really is an LMD, as we've been talking about, if he's this robot, is that going to affect him? You know, because... he hasn't really been right near it at this point, and, you know, what's going on. But what we got was this Coulson who impresses me. He, in some instances, he seems like the bureaucratic company man who comes in and cleans up stuff. And he can be scary, right? He's kind of a man in black, you know, in those senses where, you know... what was the Mike Peterson in the first episode, you know, all of a sudden this guy comes in and says, hey, we know who you are. You know, we want to talk to you. And, you know, say, oh my God, you know, you guys you're going to take me and experiment on me or whatever. But in this one, Coulson sits down with this firefighter and, you know, it's like, buddy, I know exactly how you feel and what's going on, you know, what's going through your head. And I felt like, Coulson was going to risk his own life, you know, just to stay with this guy and make sure that he was comfortable. It wasn't about anything else, but just kind of easing this guy's suffering.
Yeah. It really just cemented what kind of a hero Coulson is. And that wasn't the only time in this episode that it did that. But he, you know, that was so much, you know, I mean, I guess it was considered character development. Although, I mean, I think he's always kind of been like that, and putting these kind of misfits together and trusting in them, shows that, that kind of, that he's willing to make the hard choices, you know, when he thinks it's right. And he, you know, he's a Boy Scout. That's the way I would describe him.
Which is interesting, because
he believes is right, even if it's dangerous for him.
We opened with the Boy Scouts. Actually, they're the Ranger Scouts in this. But, yeah, he does. When you think that he's going to be kind of towing the company line, he ends up, you know, shucking that responsibility. And he goes through many steps of that in this particular episode. At the end, I mean, he tells Agent Blake, you know, or Blake is telling him, you know, like, you may just, you know, end up losing your team. And he's like, I'd like to see anyone, you know, try to take him from me. He's loyal. And like you said, this is the heroism that we're seeing in him as just a person, someone without superpowers. So how are normal people heroes? And how is someone a hero to like a firefighter who, you know, is someone who is probably looked upon as a hero by many others in the community? And here's this man, he sits down and he listens to this guy's problems and he talks to him and tries to calm him down, because which he does. The guy was obviously agitated by this noise that he can hear, and you know, the fact that these objects are levitating by him. I mean, you're wondering, wow, you know, is Coulson going to get stabbed by this floating knife, or, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. It was a really just great scene. And what really kind of frustrates me, I guess, is that I think there are a lot of people that haven't had a chance to see this, because I know a lot of people saw that third episode and were kind of like, yeah, you know what, I'm bailing. And this is what I signed up for. I mean, cool things like this. I thought there was some, you know, the action sequence that was in it, I thought was fun, and not too cheesy, though not fabulous. But the writing is just, you know, amazing, and the directing along with it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I actually really liked the little action sequence there. It wasn't too complex, and it fit the episode perfectly. But if it continues like this with these kinds of improvements and this kind of writing, then I really hope people start tuning in again and checking it out, because – you know, I think it's going to last longer, and I think we're going to get some really quality episodes as we move forward. So, man, just good job. You know, I mean, thumbs up on this one for sure.
And we'll see what happens with this crossover with Thor: The Dark World, and if that starts bringing people back in, and then hopefully, you know, they'll leave the mid-season or the winter break with a nice cliffhanger or something like that, and give people a chance to catch up with the episodes. So overall for this episode, since we can't really look at the title and, you know, have it point to any particular theme, I guess, in this particular episode.
Yeah, it wasn't a real deep title or anything like that.
No, it's just more like a spark. I believe the theme for this episode is sacrifice. That theme is kind of rife throughout the whole episode here. And the most obvious one is with Gemma Simmons, who I think both she, Elizabeth Henstridge, and Ian DeCastecker, who plays Fitz, I think they both had a real standout episode. They had some great banter back and forth, and we got to see, you know, some emotional moments and really kind of plumb the depths of these characters and find out more about them. But she kind of makes the ultimate sacrifice in this episode, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And she's kind of without hesitation, you know? I mean, emotional, of course, But she, it, there was never any doubt in her mind that she was going to do what was right. She was going to try,
right,
to obviously not have to make that a sacrifice. But then she did it, which again goes to show you that Coulson knows who he's picking. He knows the true nature of these people, and he knows that ultimately they'll do what's right, which I think is why he was so disappointed in Sky when you know she betrayed them last time.
Uh-huh.
Because I still think he knows there's good in her, but it was kind of like, you know, when you have a kid and they make a mistake, but it's like a really big mistake that has a lot of consequences to it. You know, you know they're your kids, you know they're still good, and everybody makes mistakes, but it's a big mess to clean up.
Right. Well, I mean, I think he was really upset with Simmons in this episode. Coulson was upset with Simmons in this episode as well. I mean, he really kind of laid into her at the end there, and I don't know if it was more for show, you know, or if – I mean, I think he was concerned and probably was upset, which was why he was yelling at her like he was. You know, he was angry about her taking this decision, and, you know, maybe he's trying to keep some semblance of the rank and file order of the organization. You know, it's like it wasn't her decision to make about jumping out of the plane. So,
yeah, I think it kind of felt like, and Coulson, he implied this when he talked later on to the head agent
Blake.
Blake, right. I don't know, he's kind of implied this several times throughout the season, but how he doesn't accept failure from his team. And I think what he was trying to tell Simmons is, look, we are going to fix whatever happens. You don't have to make this kind of decision. We're going to take care of you no matter what. And that's why I think he was kind of making that point with her, because then he kind of ended up with, you know, well, okay, we're all good here. We're done. And right. I've yelled at you like I'm supposed to, but now you know you can trust the team. But
oh, are we supposed to leave, you know, now?
I think it's complex. This was really good writing in that you have to kind of interpret what all that meant, because obviously he was mad, but he was also very relieved. And, you know, why do you do those things?
Yeah.
But
now let me ask you, did you, two-part question, I guess, did you think she was actually going to jump out of the plane, or did you think that, someone was going to stop her? And second, did you think she was actually going to die?
First, did I think she was going to jump out of the plane? I think so. I mean, I guess I didn't surprise me, I should say. That wasn't my first thought, as like, oh yeah, she's going to go jump out of the plane now. But it didn't surprise me when she ultimately did. Did I think she was going to die? No. It's not that I don't think they couldn't sacrifice some of the characters in this show, and I think that's a good feeling to kind of hold on to, because it gives you a sense of suspense and mm-hmm. and uncertainty, which, you know, makes for more drama and tension. But I think it's just too early on to kill any of the main characters.
I was unsure about whether or not they were just going to let her go, and because I was, you know, how the heck are they going to stop this? And I thought it was a, you know, pretty good solution to the whole scene, and you really don't, you know, see how they, you know, get back in the plane and how much time actually has gone by. But obviously, Coulson, you know, lets them know that it was a hassle.
I will tell you, I did think that Fitz was going to jump out after her. I thought he was going to be the one to do it, which probably would have been a lot more impractical and unrealistic. But right. But I did think he was going to do it.
I mean, I was like, oh my gosh, can he even get out of that room? Which I guess he could. It was just that there was a commercial coming, and so he couldn't get out before the commercial because they said there's a commercial coming and you can't get out.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird transition, because yeah. that seemed too easy, because I agree with you. I thought he was going to get stuck in there, but and then he was just out.
Yeah.
But that was okay.
But Yeah, I felt there was, you know, some tension. Is like, I don't know, she may not get out of it. Because they spent enough time building this up. It wasn't just like, you know, it wasn't the last 10 minutes where you discovered that she was sick and then they spent 2 minutes, you know, figuring out how to save her. They went through, you know, it was the whole second half of the episode, basically acts three and four. And I have to say, you know, I was rooting for them, you know, with the third rat or mouse or whatever it was that, you know, was going to work. And then when Fitz is standing there, I think it was the third one, and, you know, all of a sudden it was like floating and it was good, and then all of a sudden it sparks. I laughed just because of the way they shot it. I don't know. It's like the lighting effect on Fitz's face, and then his, you know, mouth kind of drops, and I'm like, you know, because it was one of those things where it's like, you know, it looked like it worked. And then it doesn't work. So it's, I guess it reminds me of those scenes where, you know, someone thinks they fix something and all of a sudden it shorts out or whatever. And there's a little puff of smoke and, you know, everybody kind of chuckles, but the stakes were definitely much higher in this. And, like I said, I think I felt a lot of, I felt more, tension, and, you know, I actually, you know, feel like I care about these characters, that there was something at stake. And it wasn't just some made up gobbledygook that I didn't care about. You know, the show's made me care, you know? So,
yeah, it did. I mean, I did. I was really worried. I cared about Simmons. I mean, I thought she did such a good job with the emotional part of the acting, and actually Fitz too. And you could really tell that they were, worried about each other, and it made me feel for them a lot more than, say, some of the Sky and the Ward things that have been going on.
You feel like those characters can take care of themselves, like,
yeah,
the Wards,
yeah,
and the Skies. Whereas, you know, these, I guess they have their own, you know, luckily she was infected by something that a biologist could solve, and that, you know, a physicist or whatever he is, you know, could solve. You know, but, yeah, they seem a little, I don't know, Sky does, I guess, to a degree, but they seem a little more, you know, down to earth and relatable, you know, than someone like Ward. But that's the point of his character, right? He's just kind of cold and distant, and we just, you know, we haven't gotten past that, you know, in his character yet.
Yeah, I guess he's kind of had his character moment episode. I can't remember which one we said it was, but I'm not sure. I think there's a lot more to him.
Wasn't I Spy, was it? The one with the lady with the X-ray camera in her eye.
That might have been the one that we kind of said it was. They looked into him a little bit more, but I think there's a lot more to him then we're seeing that they're probably going to have to expand on.
Yeah.
He's still kind of he hasn't quite grown on me yet. Which surprises me, because it seems like he's kind of like the big strong man of the show that could be the good leader, but I'm not feeling like he is yet.
Well, which is why his character is ripe for the jokes that, and the impersonations that people did of him in the episode, which, hilarious stuff. I mean, obviously, I think we both thought that was really funny.
That was good. That was good. And it also showed the connection with Fitz and Simmons, too.
Right. Right. Well, and you know, you find out, we just got so much about their time together. You know, we find out that basically they've been partners since the Academy, however long that's been. And, you know, it seems like a long time for them. I'm guessing, like, you know, 6 to 8 years or something like that they've probably been together. So very cool. Another element of sacrifice in this episode, I think, is with Coulson himself. And I think we saw that in the scene that I was talking about earlier with the firefighter at the firehouse, because Coulson, he puts himself in a position that he could be sacrificing you know, himself. He, you know, it wasn't about him at that point. It was about helping this firefighter. And if that meant that he got taken out too, you know, so be it. But he admits many different things in this episode. I was also surprised at the level of depth that we kind of plumbed with Coulson. Especially, I guess it would have to be in the last, what, like 10 minutes there in his scene with Agent May.
Yeah. And again, they left you kind of hanging with just a little bit of what might have happened, and then they cut it off. You know, and that was actually kind of with May, especially, actually, because they were, you know, saying something about how she's gone through something similar or something right. that was also traumatic, and then they didn't talk anymore about that. So,
right. But, she may have had some sacrifice as well. We just don't know what it is, because it sounds like you said, from that discussion that, you know, maybe she died at some point as well, or, you know, obviously there's something huge in her backstory, and we just don't know what it is, but we're getting a little bit more tease for it.
Yeah. But the thing about Coulson, you know, I kind of like how they have built this up just a little bit each episode. And now you're really starting to see that he's concerned about something. He's concerned about whatever's going on or whatever happened to him and how he's feeling. And he just doesn't quite feel right. And, you know, I don't know where they're going with it. I mean, we've speculated and we have a couple ideas of where they might go with it.
Right.
But I keep getting doubts about some of our speculations, you know, whether he's an LMD or what he is. My biggest question from this episode was his scar.
Okay.
Because they showed his scar.
Yeah.
Which really surprised me. Now, because as soon as she asked him did she say
take off your shirt?
And he didn't really take it off, did he? He just kind of opened it. But.
Right.
but as soon as she said that, I'm like, whoa, what are we going to see? Is this going to be a robot and he didn't realize it? Is this why he always wears a suit? Is this
– Oh, my gosh. I've never noticed these wires before.
Well, I mean, you know what I mean? Because he's always wearing the suit no matter where – even if they're storming the beach somewhere,
right.
he's got his suit on.
But we know he changes his suit because he's got a closet full of like six or seven of them. So.
Yeah. I mean, I thought about that too. But
right.
So as soon as they showed his scar – My doubts about him being an LMD came back.
Really?
Why would he have a scar as an LMD? I mean, just to make him think he's the real Coulson?
Oh,
or?
Yeah. So we've talked about the potential of him being a so we've talked that he really did die in the Avengers and that he is now a life model decoy robot implanted with Coulson's memories. There's also been discussion maybe there never really was a Coulson and he's always been a robot and, you know, they can just keep bringing him back as many times as possible, which leads to speculation that he's going to turn into the Vision, which is a robot superhero at some point.
Mm-hmm.
We also talked about he talks about Tahiti. It's a magical place, which, by the way, great T-shirt this week from – you can check our Facebook page. I posted a photo of it. It's not available anymore, but one of the – it was either Shirtwood or somebody else had a T-shirt said, visit Tahiti. It's a magical place, and I thought that was really funny. So, you know, there was talk about magic. Was he healed by some sort of magical – force in the Marvel universe that we just don't know about or something else. And who knows, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. has access to, I'm sure, all sorts of really interesting things. So like you said, when they show this scar, all these questions, you know, come back. And like I said, you know, at the beginning of the episode or earlier in the episode, I'm like, oh, what happens if he's around one of these those magnetic pulses when it goes off? If he's really a robot or an LMD, you know, is that going to mess with him? But then he opens his shirt and we see this scar and you listen to the things that he says and Clark Gregg did just a phenomenal job delivering these lines. He talks about he died and he feels like he's a different person. He ordered these tests, which he was lying to everybody, saying that it was his doctor needed to run tests like 3 months early. But he's Coulson's actually not feeling like himself. So he is having physical exams run of him to make sure, you know, to see what may be going on. And of course, everything comes out normal. But he's saying he doesn't feel the same. And then May and him just have this great discussion. Well, of course you don't feel the same. You know, you died, whether it was for 8 seconds or longer. You know, you can't have something like that happen to you. Whether he died in the literal sense of he's dead and he's now something else, or, you know, you had a near-death experience like so many people talk about. He died. He saw the light. He found something that was beautiful, which is what he told the fireman, the firefighter. And, you know, he was at peace. And now he feels different because, you know, you hear about these people that have these near-death experiences and they come back and they're like, you know, they want to go back because it was so peaceful and they can't achieve that anymore. And, you know, May just points out, it's like, you are a different person now. I mean, you have experienced something that nobody else has or few other people have. And that has changed you, and it's changed you for the best. Agent Blake mentions that at the end of the episode. It's like, that's not the Phil Coulson I knew. And he's like, I'm different. I'm not the guy you used to know. And I think now that all of this talk about, oh, you know, he's all these teases that they've been putting in there about he's feeling rusty or his muscle memory's off or something like that. I think, you know, and maybe this is exactly what they want me to do, but I feel like we've been being led on a merry chase that it's like, you know, they're laughing and saying, oh, look at all these fanboys that are, you know, thinking this happened. It's like, no, I mean, we told you exactly what happened. He died and he came back to life. You know, they fixed him up. So I think that, you know, he had an NDE and is not, you know, a robot or anything. And he's just a man who has experienced, you know, something phenomenal and is grateful and has a second chance and just has to, you know, figure out how to continue to live his life now.
Hmm. Hope is a little more complicated than that. I mean, that's not a bad thing. And like I said, I kind of have always hoped that it was the real Coulson and something different had happened.
Right.
I hope it's a little more complex than just like, wow, this was just a really traumatic thing, and you're going to be okay once you work through it. But
I mean, as a superhero show, true, you do hope for a little bit more. I don't know what I want to say. You know, just complexity, I guess. But
yeah,
you know, from a character point, I mean, that's just. I think it's just a really, you know, beautiful sentiment that you don't get in shows, right? I mean, everybody should be thankful for their life every day. You know, I mean, it's in some instances, it's like a miracle that, you know, any of us, you know, can survive or, you know, all the little things that have to happen for you to come into being and to experience life and all this stuff, you know, not from a theological standpoint, just from a biological standpoint. And, you know, it's incredible that life exists. So, you know, it should be precious and stuff like that. So I don't know. I find a real connection to that sort of,
yeah, well, I think it's good. And I, either way, even if it is just that, they still have to explain how it came back to life. So, I mean,
yeah. Oh, it was a combination of super soldier serum with gamma radiation and some nanobites and, blah, 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 blah. So,
there you go. See, that explains it. I'd be
there. We go. I did it. Ta-da.
I did that.
So, going back to the discussion that he had with May, do you think? Well, actually, what is your take on takeaway on anything that May had to share? Because she has some coded message. Obviously, she and Coulson know what's going on, but the audience is not clued into it yet. What's your diagnosis there?
I still think that she was on some sort of like mission or something like that where she lost her whole team or you know, the decision she made caused her team to be eliminated or fail real bad or something like that. I still think it's kind of something like that.
Okay.
I mean, it did sound similar, like she had died too, but
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how that would fit in with everything else we've seen with her and the things that they've shown in the episode, but it might, like I said, they stop it, you know, right before they give you anything real, real good that would help put those puzzle pieces together. So
yeah,
she's got to have, I mean, we really, throughout all of this, of all the characters that have been either had a show like this where they focused on them specifically, or even just giving you little things like here and there, like Sky, you know, they've just sprinkled little things about how her past has brought her to where she is now.
Yeah.
I think Agent May is the one that we know the least about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Even Coulson.
Oh, I think we know a lot about Coulson. I mean, because we've just seen him around enough, too, and you know, we can imagine, based on stuff that happened in the Avengers or things like that, what his backstory is. And it doesn't sound like it's too complex. I mean, you know, just an agent that, you know, works his way up the ranks until becomes the head of the whatever group, you know, and finally is working hand in hand with Nick Fury and stuff like that. So I would think Agent May is probably the last character that we need to kind of get a you know, their own show about. This was definitely, I think, you know, a Simmons and maybe even a little bit further, a Fitzsimmons episode, because it definitely delved into both their characters, probably a little more for Simmons, just because she was the focus of it. But I think you got a lot about Fitz. I mean, you know, you find out that he is still just really not comfortable around dead bodies or dead cats.
Or women.
Or women, right. I would have done it. I you know, and also you find out that when he and Simmons start arguing and overlapping their speech, it's nearly impossible to decipher what either is saying due to their accents. So, you had a note here about the storyline seems to be leading into, you know, more of a Coulson story. Is that just, you know, based on this stuff here at the end? Is that what your thought was?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think because it has felt like they kind of focus on a different character each episode, but they're giving you little, you know, little crumbs to follow Coulson's story throughout those. And it seems like it's leading up to something that will eventually be one episode based on the whole mystery of where he came from. So, then I was kind of wondering, you know, so who's next? So we just had this, Fitz and Simmons episode. So who do we have next? My guess would be, something about Agent May, in the next story. And I could be wrong. I'm just kind of guessing based on who we haven't really heard much about.
Yeah.
I would think they would save all the Coulson stuff until last, if they're going down the list of agents, but it could be something they kind of string along throughout the season.
Well, next episode definitely is a you know, more of a secret. We're going into level 8, so you know that is beyond our pay grade. So we really don't know what's happening. We were just going to be going along for the ride, it seems like. So we'll have to see if there's more May in that episode than anybody else, but.
I'm still trying to get a raise to level 8, but
yeah,
I can't pass the test.
It's tough. You know, you just got to keep studying, dude. So
it was the IQ test. I'm not passing or something.
I also wanted to make mention of the different locations that S.H.I.E.L.D. has around the globe, and they're, I don't know, I guess they're not so secret code names for stuff. So the first one is Slingshot, which is a rocket that fires stuff into the sun. That was where they put the 084. And of course, you know, to get enough speed to get fired into the sun, they are probably having to slingshot it around the moon or some other planetary body. Then they come up with something in the asset called the fridge, which is where they put Graviton, right? So he is, quote, on ice. You know, it's like, okay, but we still don't know where that is, you know, some kind of vault facility. And then this episode introduced us to the sandbox, which is in a big desert somewhere in Africa. That's what we know. As you know, it's as the graphic comes up on screen where the bus is parked in this desert and it says, the sandbox location, like undisclosed or secret or something like that. And my son's like, well, duh, it's obviously in a big African desert. It's like, okay, yeah, well, there are a couple of those. They cover quite a amount of space, so they don't know exactly where it is. But
that was the one thing in this episode I thought was just a little bit too convenient. It just
the sandbox?
Yeah, I mean, why would S.H.I.E.L.D. have a place in an African desert? Why not here? I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. is an American agency, isn't it?
They're global. I mean, they have a global reach.
That's true, I guess. They had, because in was it in China? Was it China? Is that where?
Yeah, they were in China for that.
Scorch came from in China, yeah.
Yep.
And they had people they were working with. Were they actual S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, or were, I thought they were just.
Yeah, like, I think he was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. The one guy that was supposedly keeping an eye on Scorch, he was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, from what I understand. Okay. And then in the opening, in the pilot, Ward was doing something in Paris, but you know that could have, you know, that's just like a mission. It would be like a CIA operative going somewhere, you know, in around the world. But yeah, they
really, I mean, I think it was the reason they had the sandbox was because they needed a place where. The plane was on its way and couldn't land anywhere.
Right.
And to keep them up there for dramatic tension. But well, that's okay. No big deal.
Yeah. And besides the fact that, you know, it's in a desert and it's called the sandbox. Haha. I think it also has to, in terms to do with, they're taking this Chitauri helmet that's got these, that's got a epithelial cells from a Chitauri, you know, warrior, plus probably some of the little microbes from this disease or whatever it is, this virus. A sandbox in terms of like programming is sort of a place where you can go to test stuff out to work with it before you actually use it in a real application. So the fact that the sandbox is also a big place full of sand, but it could also be a place where they're going to, you know, examine this and they're going to work on making their own, you know, bioweapon or something like that. So there's different, you know, there's definitely a different application for it there. I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. is right now, we don't know too much about the larger organization, which I think would be nice to see. Jim Steranko, who was the one of the original artists and writers for the S.H.I.E.L.D. stories, he's been posting on, I think it's Entertainment Weekly, has been getting his posts, and his complaint is that we're not seeing kind of this larger, you know, element of the company. Like, I think we got a nice tease for this week. You see Blake, who represents S.H.I.E.L.D. proper, and we can see how he reacts differently than the way Coulson reacts. So we can kind of see that, you know, this is the way the company behaves, but Coulson is, you know, kind of bucking company, you know, the company line in so many ways. And also Agent Blake is a jerk. Did you see what he did at the end of the episode?
Yes.
Nobody.
I know exactly what you're talking
nobody
about.
Nobody touches Lola. And no. He kind of runs his finger across it, and it's like, what a jerk.
I wanted to go and slap his finger off there.
Yeah.
It's not even my car.
I just wish they had had a little, you know, like Coulson like muttered something under his breath. They just kind of ended it with that. But, you know, I think that's the difference, you know, in these, with these agents and stuff like that. And they're, you know, they're trying to give you a little hint that, you know, maybe not everything is peachy keen between these guys, even though they've worked together for a while. So
I liked it, that though. It was a very subtle yet effective way to show that this guy's arrogant, you know, that this guy's like, yeah, do what I want, you know, I'm gonna touch your car.
Yeah.
But I guess, I'm, you know, I'm guessing that's how he is. They didn't show much of him, but that's how he came across to me. As soon as he did that, I'm like, ah, this guy's a jerk.
Yeah. Well, so some of the other references that we saw this week, while I'm talking about Blake here, we'll just go with that one first here. So Titus Welliver returns as Agent Blake. He was last seen in the Marvel one-shot called Item 47, which was on the Avengers Blu-ray. And I think in that episode or that mini-movie, it was like 12 minutes or something like that, we find out that he basically has replaced Agent Coulson at whatever level Coulson had reached, you know, in terms of the organization. He's like the replacement for Coulson when he died. The character or the actor may look familiar to fans of genre TV. He was the Man in Black on Lost, which I don't think we ever got a name for
him. Okay. That was driving me crazy all week.
You can, you know, he looks a little bit different, but, you know, he's kind of wearing the dark suit and everything there like that, so.
He has that kind of face that is distinct, you know, you know you've seen him, and I just could not place where, and as soon as you said that, that's, I'm like, I know exactly who you mean.
The smoke monster, yep. There's a great Big Lebowski reference, so that's cool. It's, Sky equated Captain America to the dude. The dude abides. And then this was an interesting little tidbit here that all this stuff kind of stands out to me. And again, I think it's probably just because I'm really steeped in the lore of the comic series and stuff like that. But if you remember back in I Spy, which was the episode with the woman that had the camera in her eye that could see x-rays and stuff like that. Everyone's wondering, how, before they know that that's what she has, they're wondering, how is she doing this? Is it ESP? And it was either Fitz or Simmons, I think, kind of scoffed at that because Sky had made the suggestion. And even though that happened, in this episode, in episode 6 here, Fitz mentions that he and Simmons spent some time together in the academy and then in the PsyOps group, which is a group in the comics that, you know, deals with it's psychological operations, but it also has to do with ESP and people, you know, working on their psychic ability and stuff like that. So
that anything that have to do anything with like staring at goats and things like that?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Oh, okay.
But that would be kind of cool. And then, this may be just stretching it, and I don't know if it's a reference, but, you know, I feel my personal opinion is that writers of TV shows and movies don't have characters do or say things just for the heck of it. Like, there's a reason for it. It's not really an accident that people, you know, say things in a certain way. It might be a happy accident at some point, but there, you know, maybe something else to it. There's a point where Ward is, he's kind of wringing his hands in the plane because he can't do anything, right? He's saying he just wants someone to punch, you know, and he wishes there was a bad guy, but he can't do anything, you know, with this virus and stuff like that. And he just wishes there was someone to punish. And it was just the emphasis that was on that. And, it very much reminded me of The Punisher, which is another Marvel superhero. Well, or not really superhero, but character in the Marvel universe.
Anti-hero.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't really have superpowers. He's just a dude that goes out and punishes people, brings the pain with weapons and stuff like that. And the rights to the Punisher, I think, just reverted back to Marvel Studios. So not that I think that Agent Ward is going to be the Punisher or that the Punisher is going to show up on the show or anything like that. That's just that's kind of ludicrous. but just something else that, like I said, kind of pops out at me. So anything else that that you saw that I may have missed there?
No, I went back and I looked and tried to find something too. So I could share one thing with you, but I think you covered it pretty good in this episode.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know that there was, there didn't seem to be a lot, of references. I mean, they mentioned Iron Man, they mentioned Captain America and stuff like that, but, they were spending, you know, they were actually focusing their time on this episode, working with character and stuff like that, instead of trying to, you know, let you know that this is actually taking place in the Marvel Universe and name dropping all sorts of stuff. So, any final thoughts on the episode? What I think we said at the beginning of the episode, we both thought this was pretty strong.
Yeah, I think this was probably my favorite episode of the series so far. And I'm not entirely sure it was because of the character development. I did like that. And we've said I think since the first, very first pilot episode that we both like, Fitz and Simmons, I thought this was a good way to develop who they were. So I would kind of like to see the character stuff continue, but I also like the, you know, the idea of these little floating bodies, floating dead bodies, and the electrostatic thing seemed, it was just comic booky enough to not be hokey and still fit in with the genre. So I just keep doing that, keep using that. You know, stop with the name dropping of Avengers characters and movie characters, and maybe start focusing in on some others that we haven't seen or heard of in any other form of Marvel entertainment so far in movies, mm-hmm. or TV. I just keep doing that, and they are on the right track. I'm telling you, I hope people start jumping back on the bandwagon and seeing the improvements that they've made. And I think they have a plan.
Yeah.
And it's just going to take a few episodes to get it. And I think we will.
The preview for next week looks, you know, to be very exciting. It looks to be probably a higher action episode after this one, which was a relatively quiet episode. You know, again, took place in the plane most of the time. So looking forward to seeing some action and adventure in that one, and we'll see what happens. So just be sure to come back next week after watching the episode and join us here on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. So, but that's about, I think that'll wrap it up for this week. From Agent Ward and Agent Ward here.
Well, if you enjoy this episode, make sure you guys leave feedback for us on the iTunes. And also, you can get a hold of us if you want. Email at is shield@randomchatter.com, shield@randomchatter.com. And our Twitter handle there is @agentspodcast. And our Facebook page is facebook.com/agentspodcast.
And if you enjoy superhero TV shows, be sure to watch Arrow on the CW and then check out our other podcast that Josh and I host, Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. And it is also available on randomchatter.com. It's in its second season, but you can catch up with all of the episodes on Netflix and then listen to all of our back episodes of the podcast. We cover the same kind of stuff we do here on Case Files with that show, which takes place in the DC universe. So, and if you enjoy Case Files here, please be sure to tell all your friends about us, because that's the only way we're going to get any bigger. So for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.